Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
A great baseball book is now out for you. Baseball in St. Louis, from little leagues to major leagues. It's written by my guest, Ed Wheatley. And Ed has done so much tremendous work. That name may ring a bell for sports fans and Cardinal fans and Browns fans. He's done so much work with the St. Louis Browns and also just keeping the memories of many people and the game of baseball alive here in town. Ed, as always, good to visit with you. How are things?
Oh, glad to be with you. Just trying to get through this like everyone else. Hope everybody's safe and their families are in good shape. And let's get through it and go live some baseball memories.
You bet. Tell us about the book. What is this book all about?
Really, this book is about the love of the game of baseball. And it kind of is an offshoot of my Browns book, where you just saw this love of this Browns team. But it's more than that. The love of baseball in St. Louis. And, you know, it really comes to the fact that, as so many people say, St. Louis is the best baseball town in America. And you start looking, why is that? And it really starts with the roots of the love of baseball. You know, we joke that, and I use in the opening the Bull Durham statement from Annie Savoy, Susan Sarandon's character, where she says, "I've tried all the religions I really have, but the church of baseball fills my soul day in and day out." And I think that says so much for St. Louis. You know, we joke that opening day is our national holiday. And you look at how people are in the summer. You know, you'd be standing in a grocery store line. People don't talk to you. But, you know, you'll be wearing a Cardinal hat or your Cardinal shirt, and there'll be a great play. Hey, somebody will say, "Hey, did you see that catch Harrison Bader made last night? What about, you know, Colton Wong's double? Did you see that?" You know, people talk. It brings people together, whether it's just chit-chat or even in times of social unrest or even these economic times. Baseball has something that it brings people together. And I wanted to explore what St. Louis was. And that's when you find there's this tremendous history. It goes all the way back to 1860, the very first game played under the Alexander Cartwright's rules of baseball was played at Fairgrounds in 1860. That's a year before the Civil War. And we then have all this great history. How did it take from this amateur to professional to the Cardinals that we have today? But more importantly, and there is this mass education of people from playing in high school, American Legion, college, and you start realizing St. Louis had some of the best high school programs in the country, some of the American Legion championships, the Union Printers National Championships. All this really comes back, and I think we've got a tremendously educated fan base that, you know, they're the kind of people that come to the game. And the other team playing, the Cardinals, they make a great play. Our fans are known and respected for giving that great play an applause, not booze, but applause. Or when a guy like Albert Pujols, who abandoned St. Louis, he comes back, what happens? Standing ovation after standing ovation. It's just, why are we in this making of this baseball town?
So if you had to answer that question, why has it been so good? What do you think the answer is?
Simply the love of the game. You know, it started as a time, the game started back in the late 19th century, in the 1800s, because that's all there was baseball. They don't have TV. They don't have radio, movie theaters. They don't have all this. Baseball became embedded. It started as an amateur game, as clubs farmed to do some type of recreation, because all people had was long hours of hard sweat labor. But baseball was a way to relax. And then it became, you know, factory versus factory, community versus community, and it all built out. And people bonded with the game. It was something also that almost anybody can play baseball. You know, not everybody's going to be a major leaguer. Very few do. But everybody, boy, girl, no matter race, religion, whatever, has played baseball in our city and state. So, and that's the thing, too. This is not just about St. Louis City proper. We go across the river into Illinois, Belleville, Edwardsville, you know, New Athens, Granite City, just as much as we go out west into, you know, St. Charles, Wentzville, and those areas. It's amazing what you find in the history of baseball.
What did you find about Little Leagues in particular with baseball in St. Louis? We all played Little League baseball, so what did you find out about it?
Well, I mean, the thing is, where playground leagues were farmed by the police department in the 30s and 40s, but the most amazing thing that few people realize and recognize is the Cory League, which is in all 50 states and in other countries across the globe. It was founded here in St. Louis by George Cory and is still headquartered here in St. Louis. Even though the Cory Leagues have been kind of taken over by a lot of these communities running their own programs, the basis and the foundation for the Little Leagues is the Cory Leagues, which is a St. Louis product. And, you know, talking to, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of people I worked with in writing this book, and actually the Cory Leagues opened up and gave me their whole archives to go through. I think the proudest moment for any young kid from the 50s and early 60s was to be on that Cory League All-Star team and have your team picture out in left field at Sportsman's Park with that big iconic scoreboard in the background. I think for so many people, that was one of the first keepsakes they immediately brought out to tell their story.
How about the best players that came from St. Louis, in the city of St. Louis? I mean, I've got an idea of who they might be, but in your research, who were the best players that you found?
Well, I mean, and that's an interesting thing in debate, where I've gone through all these years of all the great high schools, all the great American Legion teams, and how many men make the major leagues. And, you know, the estimate is about 6 million kids play baseball every year, and they've been doing this for, you know, many, many decades. And how few people, as you well know, Dan, probably the last I looked, it was like 19,500 men played in the major leagues, going back to 1876 records when the National League was formed. So making the major leagues is hard. And what I found for a lot of these great amateur ballplayers in St. Louis, you know, some of them got hurt. They couldn't go and make it. Technology didn't exist to make them better. Many of these players also said, I got blocked. I shouldn't have signed with the Yankees as an example. The Yankees in 1952 had 24 minor league teams. That's 600 players you're going to compete with. And it was always, I wish I'd have signed with the Phillies or the Senators. I might have made it to the major leagues. But, you know, we have quite a few men who made it to the major leagues. We list all those players, just like we list all the players in the St. Louis Amateur Baseball Hall of Fame. But the best in St. Louis, what I did, I went through all this analysis and took two at each position, three right-handed starters, three left-handed starters, and put three guys in the bullpen. And, you know, who were the best of the best? And, you know, immediately everybody knows or should resonate that Yogi Berra is the best major leaguer to come out of St. Louis without a question. When you look at all his World Series appearances, you know, he was in the World Series 14 times. He was an All-Star 18 times. And then people always say, well, Joe Garagiola, he's your backup. It's like, no. There's a man named Elston Howard, who actually was Yogi's successor with the Yankees. And Elston had 10 World Series appearances and 12 All-Stars and won the MVP in 1963. Elston Howard is probably the greatest African-American ball player to come out of St. Louis. But that's just the kind of hot stove debate that's the beauty of baseball, is, you know, who should play this position or that position. And, you know, I did it. Found out there's a man nobody knows about is a pitcher, a right-handed starting pitcher, the first man to win 300 games before Cy Young, Pud Galvin. How many people know who Pud Galvin is, that he grew up in St. Louis, and he's in the Hall of Fame? But the other thing is, we've got great players. You know, you have a first baseman, you got Ryan Howard, Nate Colbert, Roy Sievers played left and he played first, but we put him. Roy Sievers was the first American League Rookie of the Year in 1949. He's in the outfield with Lee Thomas. Lee Thomas, we recognize as a great ball player with the Angels. He signed originally with the Yankees, was traded to the Angels in 61, had multi-years of 20 or more home runs. Then he came back later on and led the front office activities with the Cardinals and then went to be the GM of the Philadelphia Phillies when they won the pennant. So there's strong people in picking this team, and it's a great thing to just sit around and ask people who are the best at each position. And I will say shortstop was probably the hardest of them all. And I was talking with Dal Maxville, who are starting shortstop on the Sol St. Louis team, and people forget he's got 4 World Series ring and he's got another World Series appearance in 68 when the Cardinals didn't win, but he got a ring in 64 and 67 with the Cardinals, and then he went out to Oakland as part of their great teams and got it. But finding a backup, and I even asked Dal when I was talking to him about it, put your general manager hat on and tell me, who do you think is the best shortstop next to you to come out of St. Louis? And he says, that's a good question, because so many people have asked him that, and it's hard. We didn't have a lot of shortstops. We got a lot of great pitchers. I mean, you know, how many Cy Youngs did we have by St. Louis pitchers? But in the end of the day, we went with Jerry Buchek, who helped the Cardinals in their pennant years of the 60s. You know, he was a McKinley High product. But, I mean, when you look at how many Cy Youngs and no-hitters have been thrown by St. Louis pitchers in the major leagues, it's amazing. And you find out sometimes they weren't even the best on their high school team. It's just that these players didn't make it up. So it's just a great story to sit around, read the book, all these great players, and think, who are the best coming out of St. Louis?
Ed Wheatley is my guest. The book, Baseball in St. Louis, From Little Leagues to Major Leagues. We'll talk about the Negro Leagues in St. Louis when we come back.
This is Cardinals broadcaster and Schnucks shopper Dan McLaughlin. Schnucks would like to thank everyone during this difficult time. That includes those that are working in the stores. As you can imagine, during this time, Schnucks employees are putting in long hours around the clock to best serve our community. So the next time you're in Schnucks, tell them thanks and that you appreciate them. Let them know how much we appreciate their efforts, because we will all get through this together.
Luke Hughes, we are St. Louis.
Dan McLaughlin here to tell you about the hometown automotive family I trust the most, the Lou Hughes Automotive Network, and you know they are St. Louis. Lou Hughes has been a part of St. Louis for over 7 decades. They're proud to support St. Louis and the surrounding areas with cars, youth, sports, and charitable efforts. 14 brands, 10 locations. Just visit Fuse.com to start shopping today.
Lou Hughes, we are St. Louis.
Ed Wheatley is my guest. Baseball in St. Louis, From Little Leagues to Major Leagues. The author of a new book that chronicles the history of baseball in our town. From the great players, Little League, Cory League, American Legion, all the way to the pros. It is in this book, and the photography and the research and the history here is incredible. We often, you know, talk about the Cardinals or the Browns, and that's great, but there's also the history of the Negro Leagues here in St. Louis. What did you find out about the Negro Leagues that, as you researched this, and what it meant to St. Louis and vice versa?
That is a very interesting history, that the Negro Leagues and the African-American experience in baseball in St. Louis has a tremendous history and a tremendous background. And Martin Matthews of Matthews Dickey Boys and Girls Club, he kind of challenged me as we were doing research, and I went to him to open up their archives, that the African-American community isn't aware of this history. How will you bring this out? And you know, I think we did a really well job, and this may be an expansion of that, becomes the next project. But you know, we hear about the stars, and I always tell people, as you drive down Highway 40 to go to a Cardinal game, and you look over when you come upon Chaffetz Arena there at Compton, and you see Harris Stowe in the field right there, that's where the Stars Stadium was there at Compton and Market. It's still a baseball field as part of Harris Stowe, but that is really where the Stars made their great name. And before the Stars, there was the Giants. And the thing the Giants played is the Negro League started to form. And at that time, they were just kind of playing games here and there. And it's been 100 years. This is the 100th anniversary of the creation of the Negro Leagues in Kansas City, Missouri. And that's why the museum, the Negro Baseball League Museum, is in Kansas City, because that's where it was created 100 years ago this year. But the thing that I thought was really interesting, the Giants had an owner named Charles Mills, and he had kept this Giants team going, and the president of the Negro League's name was Rube Foster. And Foster and Mills did not get along. There was challenges from both parts. Mills thought that the teams weren't getting enough of their fair share, and he was trying to do some things outside the bounds of what Foster liked. And Foster really forced Charles Mills out of the Negro Leagues, and that's when another owner came in and bought them, and they changed their name to the Stars. That little scenario right there is just so reminiscent of what's going to happen 40 years later when they baseball forces Bill Veeck out of St. Louis and forces him to sell the team. So, there, you know, it's funny how baseball repeats itself. You know, when the Brown Stockings first came together as a team that would eventually come and be the Cardinals, it started with a beer man. And then what saved the Cardinals almost 70, 80 years later was another beer man, Augie Bush. And when you start connecting those stories.
Absolutely.
But back to the Negro Leagues, I mean, there were five men in the Hall of Fame who were put in from their play in the Negro Leagues from the Giants and the Stars. And unfortunately, we don't remember them. We hear about Cool Papa Bell, and we hear about Satchel Paige, who never played with the Negro Leagues here, but he played with the Browns and, you know, would be here regularly on his barnstorming tour. But, you know, we need to remember, who are these men? And the other thing, besides the Negro Leagues, there was a league up in North St. Louis. It was called the Tandy League, and was played at Tandy Park, which is in park located just across the street from Sumner High School. And it was the premier semi-pro team. It was also like the minor leagues to the Negro Leagues. And we had many, many great ball players who would make the major leagues who played in the Tandy League. So that was their experience in this segregated world. So we really go into the history of the Giants, the Stars. We go into the history of this Tandy League and how these men who came and played there, because they had no other place, because we lived in a segregated world, even in baseball. And it was interesting to go into the book and find, as I spoke a moment ago about Stars Park, and we all know where Sportsman's Park was, or we know where the two Busch stadiums downtown were. But, you know, the Giants played up at Clarence and Broadway, just at the foot of O'Fallon Park, where it makes that big bend at Highway 70 as you come downtown. Or, you know, you go to where the Maroons played or the Terriers played in those early professional teams, and where theirs were. And it really was such a concentrated grouping of stadiums. And my favorite story is where Robeson Field, sometimes called Cardinals Field, where the Cardinals, when they originally came into the National League, they came in as the Browns. And throughout the book, this is the thing I say, the term Browns is like a cat with nine lives. You have the Brown Stockings in the American Association. You have the Brown Stocking that first came into the National League in 1876. And people don't realize there were three iterations of National League teams from St. Louis before the team that we call the Cardinals joined in 1892. There had been two others that had joined the National League in 1876, played for 2 years, and then in 1886 and 85 they played for 2 years, and then finally in 1892 the Browns would change their name to Perfectos and the Cardinals, and they would stay to what we have today. But they played at Robeson Field, at Vandeventer and Natural Bridge, right across from Fairgrounds Park. And that field was the last wooden grandstand in the major leagues, and it burned down. And that's how Branch Rickey, who had moved from the Browns to the Cardinals, took the Cardinals down to play as tenants in Sportsman's Park for the Browns. But mm-hmm. That field, I kind of joke in the book, the ashes from the fire must have really worked into the field where they played ball, because Beaumont High School at one time in the late 40s and 50s had more men in the major league than any other high school in America. So it had to be something from those fires and that site there where that all happened. But it's those little quirks, probably one of my favorite quirks in the whole book, and you're a good Southsider, Dan, is corkball.
Played it all the time.
How many people realize corkball was a St. Louis institution that nobody really knew about around the country? And it was really World War II vets, men in service, as they would go. They would take their tiny corkball and bats, or get a broomstick, and teach people how to play corkball all across. And that's where the country, and that's how it became kind of a national thing. I have stories about Yogi Berra teaching the Yankees what corkball is and how to play it. You know, and for us growing up in St. Louis, you know, it really started with Catholic priests. The different parishes had their own things, and then every bar you would see these batting cages behind the bars, or even downstairs if they have. And that's, you know, one of the little oddities, how corkball is the St. Louis institution.
I'll wrap it up with this. What's your favorite part of the book, or what are you most proud of as well with the book?
Well, I think I'm the proudest of the people saying it brings back so happy memories. It touches them, and especially now in these times, we need something that's happy memories and good, because you could be a regular Joe playing baseball, and you have stories of playing against Whitey Herzog in the New Athens, Illinois high school team. Or my favorite story is Dal Maxwell told me his dad worked long hours in the Granite City steel mill. In those days, you only had one car, and they couldn't get a manager for their Cory League team over there in Granite City, so his mom did it. And I said, Dal, I wish you had a picture of this, but his mom would ride him to the park to have practice. She would be on her bike pedaling. He would be sitting on the handlebars holding two bats and the catcher's equipment so that his team could practice. That is, you know, just the image of what baseball meant to people in those days. And I'm also interested in how people react to, as we spoke earlier, the All St. Louis team. Who do you think were the best? And it's just an unbelievable history. Everything you point, and you don't have to be a big ball player. You simply were the ones who watched. Or the women, we include, you got to have women. And I've gotten to know through the reunions of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, you know, from the movie The League of Their Own. I've met them and been part of their reunions up in Cooperstown. And, you know, we had four ladies who were stars in those leagues. So, you know, this isn't just about men. This is about even the women.
So, again, the book, Baseball in St. Louis, it's available wherever books are sold. My guest, Ed Wheatley. Ed, as always, great stuff. Love the research, your time that you put in this, your love of the game. And I know fans are really going to enjoy the book. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it again.